MSW Media.
News with swearing. Daily Beans.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Friday, March 27th, 2020. Today, an update from America's Governor Cuomo. 3.3 million people have filed for unemployment in the past week. Tax information on your stimulus checks from a tax expert. A new FDA approval on testing. The U.S. fights the U.N. to call COVID-19 origins in China. A message from Barack Obama on social distancing. The Mississippi governor is untroubled by the outbreak. Trump sues over an ad. And DNR discussions with major hospitals as the surge intensifies. I'm your host, AG. And with me today is no one, at least not physically. So I am by myself today, but we do have an update coming at you in the A block on the Cuomo press conference, which is what we're going to go by from now on. And that is going to be brought to you by Jordan. And then later in the show, we have a good news block where I'll be joined by Mandy. We'll get to hear from Amanda Reeder. She is home safe. Everybody's home safe, in case you're wondering where everybody was. We have multiple podcasts on our network, the Starburns Audio Network, and everyone now is doing their podcasts remotely and not in studio. That has been making the burden on the editors and producers and engineers pretty heavy. So we've been trying to limit our discussions with, you know, outside folks. But we wanted to bring Mandy in today on Friday to read you the good news. We miss her. I miss everyone. I am by myself. It's very lonely. But this Friday, we do have the quarantine cocktail Q&A for patrons. And we're going to email a link to our patrons. So make sure to check your junk mail, too, in case, you know, we're listed as junk. Because, you know, sometimes I got some junk in my trunk, and so they might, you know, put you in the spam, put us in the spam folder. But we'll be emailing you like midday, Friday, Pacific time. And that way you'll have that link for Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, when we will have a little group live hangout, and we'll have some cocktails. I'll probably have a glass of wine, and we'll answer your questions, and that's for patrons. If you're not a patron, you want to become a premium subscriber, just head to patreon.com/thedailybeans, and you'll get not only access to those hangouts, but all the bonus content and bonus episodes. You'll get access to our past book clubs from Mueller, She Wrote, our newsletter, research notes, and you'll get these episodes ad-free. You don't have to listen to the ads, and you'll get them the night before they come out to the public. Anyway, you know all that. You've heard me say it a million times, but I'm sort of by myself, and I feel like I've put neckties on my pets, and I'm calling them my assistants. They don't do much. The dog has been supervising the cat tree, which has been helpful. Not really at all. But it's been an interesting first week of sheltering in place, to say the least. I'm probably going a little bit, getting a little cabin fever, being a little goofy, talking out loud. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Beans Pod and tell us maybe some things you say out loud to yourself, you know, during this whole thing. That'd be interesting. But we do have a lot of news to get to today. A lot of spots. We have a tax expert, Francine Lipman, who is the tax assessor from Las Vegas, and she's a tax and poverty professor at UNLV, and she's going to be answering all the questions you guys had about taxes and your stimulus check, and just sort of all around sort of what's in the stimulus bill and how it impacts us and different people at different income levels. So she'll be with us. Of course, like I said, Mandy will be joining us for the good news block. But first, we can hit the hot notes and have Jordan come in and give her update. Let's do that. Hot notes.
Hello, everybody. This is Jordan's Corn Beans coming to you from my kitchen. Not talking to AG today. Miss ya. Miss everybody. Hope everyone's doing well considering. Today, I'm going to be covering Cuomo's press conference because it was pretty epic. He just had a lot of really succinct, uplifting points throughout it, and we wanted to bring it to you today in its entirety, basically. So I'm going to be putting in a lot of clips so you can hear all of it if you didn't get it yet, and I'll also be going over some of the major facts that came out of that today. So starting off, I just want to open up with how he opened up, because it was a beautiful opening. Let's hear that.
And facts can be uplifting. They can be depressing at times. They can be confusing at times. But I think facts are empowering. You know, in a situation like this, not knowing the facts is worse, because that's when you feel out of control, or when you feel that you're getting selective facts, or you're being deceived by the information you're getting. That is actually the worst situation. So what I say to my people in every situation, just give me the facts first, and then let me understand what the situation and the reality is, and then we'll go from there. So that's what I try to do.
He then goes on to say that they're not primarily focusing on the reduction in cases, but they're primarily looking at the reduction of the rate of increase in cases. Cuomo said they're working on there being an overflow facility that will hold 1,000+ in every major county slash borough in the state. And he also confirmed that they're scouting dorms and hotels for emergency beds, and that that search is going well. He went on to say they're still in the process of procuring more ventilators, but that they've approved the technology that can make it so that one ventilator can be used on two people. It's called splitting. They're also converting a couple thousand anesthesia machines to work as ventilators, so they're getting really creative with solutions to that issue, and that's good to hear. That's great to hear. A lot of innovation going on to try to tackle this problem as quickly as they can. And he also went on to explain why so many ventilators are needed, and I wanted you all to hear this because I just think, number one, it displays, first off, how much Cuomo cares about giving people not only the facts, but also the explanations behind the facts. And I think that that's one of the most important things that leaders can be doing right now for people who are looking to them, not only for answers, but for them to calm their fears and calm, you know, part of, I feel like so much of what makes this all so scary is the uncertainty. And today, and especially in moments like the clip I'm about to play, Cuomo just does such a good job of explaining every single part of it, as much as he can, at least, in a 30-minute press conference. And because of that, it lessens the uncertainty just a tiny bit. And the more you can do that, the more people, you know, like he said in his opening statement, basically, the more you can get a grasp on what's actually happening. And once you can deal with that reality and fill in some of the missing pieces, the better equipped you are to really orient yourself around those facts. So let's hear this.
It's a respiratory illness for a large number of people. So they all need ventilators. Also, non-COVID patients are normally on ventilators for 3 to 4 days. COVID patients are on ventilators for 11 to 21 days. Think about that. So you don't have the same turnaround in the number of ventilators. If somebody's on a ventilator for 3 or 4 days, that's one level of ventilators you need. If somebody's on for 11 to 21 days, that's a totally different equation. And that's what we're dealing with, the high number of COVID patients and the long period of time that they actually need a ventilator.
Then he shifts very explicitly to examining the economic consequences of what's happening, and he does a really good job, I think, of breaking down how the pandemic is affecting state and local governments specifically, and how the stimulus package that Congress just passed doesn't address some really key elements of the economic destruction that states are facing right now, specifically New York. I'm going to play this part in its entirety because I personally found it super comforting hearing Cuomo speak super matter-of-factly about all of this without bringing partisan politics too much into it, even though he totally could if he wanted to, and he doesn't dwell on the blame game either, which I really appreciate right now, because I think the last thing, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on at this point, this is something that's affecting absolutely everybody, as is the case of politics all the time, but with something like this, I feel like it's a really, really ripe opportunity for people to put a little bit of a stop to the finger-pointing game that I know so many Americans in general just don't want to see right now. They want to see people talking about facts and they want to see people talking about solutions. And Cuomo does a really good job, I think, of defending state and local governments, but also moving on, essentially, so we can get to the stuff that he knows his people want to hear. I think it's just, it shows really good leadership, and I want you guys to hear it. So let's roll that.
What's happening to a state government, any state, what's happening to a city government is a double whammy. You have increased expenses because of the COVID virus, and you have a tremendous loss of revenue because all those businesses are closed, right? And all those people are out of work. People are out of work, they're not earning income, they're not paying income tax. Businesses are closed, they're not making money, they're not paying business revenue. So we're spending more to take care of the COVID virus, and we're receiving less. In the middle of all this, we have to balance a budget. So how do you do a budget when you have expenses going out and a loss of revenue? We estimate the loss of revenue is somewhere between $10 to $15 billion, which, you know, all these numbers are hard to give a context. That is a ton of money for the state of New York's budget. We were waiting to see what the federal government did before we determined what we had to do, because water flows downstream, right? If the federal government had taken an action that helped state governments, city governments, et cetera, that would have put us in one situation. We now know what they've done. They passed their $2 trillion stimulus bill. They say maybe they'll come back and there'll be another bill, but maybe. But we know what they did do with the stimulus bill. The stimulus bill helped unemployment insurance, and that is a good thing. It helped small businesses, and that is a good thing. It did not help local governments or state governments, and it did not address the governmental loss. And the federal officials, the ones who are being honest, will admit that. New York State receives $5 billion from the stimulus, New York State government. And it's earmarked only for COVID virus expenses, which means it does absolutely nothing for us in terms of lost revenue to the state. The only thing it's doing is helping us on the COVID virus expenses, which is nice, but the bigger problem is on the lost revenues. The congressional action, in my opinion, simply failed to address the governmental need. I spoke to all the officials involved. I spoke to our House delegation. I spoke to our senators. And I believe what they did failed to meet the governmental need. I'm disappointed. I said I was disappointed. I find it irresponsible. I find it reckless. Emotion is a luxury, and we don't have the luxury at this time of being emotional about what they did. When this is over, I promise you I'm going to give them a piece of my mind, but I would say to them today, this is an extraordinary time in this nation, and it's an extraordinary time for government. This was the time to put politics aside and partisanship aside. This is the time for governmental leaders to stop making excuses and just do your job. Do your job. We're one nation. You know the places in this nation that have the most intense problems. Address the places that need the help. And this is not a time to point fingers. This is not a time to make excuses. This is not a time to blame everyone else. We've lived with that in Washington for years. Now is a time to actually step up, do the right thing, and do your job. And they haven't, as far as I'm concerned, especially when it comes to the governmental need. In any event, we have to do a budget, and the budget is due April 1.
He then goes on to describe how the New York government is going to adjust down their own revenue projections so that they can offer adequate information about what they can afford in their budget, basically. And then the plan is to have various points in time as the actual loss of revenue numbers come in, where they adjust exactly how much they're able to afford certain state entities. So that's really nice to just hear an actual plan, even though it's not our state. We're in California here at Mueller, She Wrote, and Daily Beans. But it's so nice, I think, just to see somebody that's giving very well thought out and detailed answers, and it's answers that people want to hear. And I think about how different it is when we're listening to people on the national level talk about this. I realize that, you know, maybe a state governor is in a better position to speak to their specific budget because it's a lot less complicated than a national budget. But I'm a bit envious. I think everybody is envious on a federal level hearing Cuomo talk, because I wish that we could hear these sort of press conferences coming out of the White House every day. It would be really nice, but I'm really happy that we get to hear Cuomo talk about this stuff, and that especially the people in the state of New York have him as a leader right now. Cuomo then goes back to some of the numbers. He reports that their testing has gone up a lot. 25% of all testing that's been done in the United States has happened in New York. That is a huge number. And he explains what the real purpose of testing is here in this clip.
The testing is still helping you identify the positives and isolate the positives. The testing is not telling you how many people have the virus. And I think a lot of people conflate the two, and that's a mistake. It's not even telling you the increase in the rate of infection. All it's telling you is you're increasing the number of tests. And the more tests you do, the more positives you will find. We're working very hard to increase the number of tests because we want to find the positives.
So I think that's really important to remember about testing. He then talks about the number of people who have died of COVID-19 in New York. He said it's now up to 385. And he explains that the increase itself is not surprising, and it's expected to continue to rise, especially considering how many people have been on a ventilator for 20 to 30 days. And he explains that, as with any illness, the longer you're on a ventilator or any other kind of machine that's assisting your regular bodily functions, the lower your chances are or become of you being able to get back to a place where you're able to self-sustain those functions. And then I think he gives some really, really, really incredible closing remarks. And I want to play this clip in its entirety as well, because it is motivational, dare I say, uplifting, aware. It's an incredibly aware series of remarks, and it's productive. And it's about 7 minutes long, so just, I promise, it's like a little mini good news segment. There's not a lot of bad vibes in this. So if you're someone that's like, oh, I can't take any more of this, this is the time to push through, because I promise there's light at the end of the tunnel in this clip. So let's have a listen.
My personal opinion, not facts. I gave you the facts. My gratuitous 2 cents, which is probably worth a penny and a half. This is a life moment. It's a moment in the life of this country. It's a moment in the life of the world. It's a moment in our family lives. It's a moment for each of us. Each of us is dealing with it in our own way. And my observation has been that when the pressure is on is when you really see what people are made of. In a personal relationship, in a business relationship, you know, people can be great when everything is great. The question is, what does a person do when things aren't great? And what does a person do when the pressure is on them? And that's when you can see a little crack in the foundation of a person. But when the pressure is on that little crack can explode, and that foundation can crumble. Or you can see the exact opposite. You can see them get stronger. But you get to see what they're really made of. And you get to see the best, and you get to see the worst. You get to see the beauty in people, and you get to see the opposite. The outpouring of support for the people of New York has been so inspiring, not just from New Yorkers. I'm telling you, from across the country, from across the world, You would be amazed at how many phone calls we get, how many offers of support, how many creative ideas from everyone. We've asked medical staff to volunteer, retired medical staff who are no longer practicing. 40,000 had volunteered. We now have 12,000 more people in one day volunteering to help on the medical staff. We asked mental health professionals to come forward to volunteer to offer free mental health services for people who are dealing with the stress and the trauma of the situation. We had 6,000 people. We now have 8,600 people. We have mental health professionals from other states calling up and saying they'll provide mental health services electronically through Skype or over the telephone. I mean, it really is, it gives me such strength and such inspiration. But I don't want to sugarcoat the situation. The situation is not easy. But easy times don't forge character. It's the tough times that forge character. And that's what we're looking at right now. People say to me, you know, people are getting tired of this situation. They've been home, it's going on a couple of weeks, they're getting tired. Well, the truth is that this is not a sprint, this is a marathon. We always said this is not going to be over quickly. I understand people are tired, but I also understand that people in this situation are really stepping up to the plate and are doing phenomenal work. So the next time you feel tired, and believe me, I feel tired, but when I feel tired, I think of the first responders who are out there every day showing up. I think of the police officers. I think of the firefighters who are up there every day. The grocery store workers who are working double shifts just to keep food on the shelves because people are buying so much food because they're nervous. The pharmacists who have lines going out the door and they're showing up every day, day after day. The transportation workers who don't have the luxury of feeling tired, because they have to get up and they have to drive the bus so the nurses and the healthcare professionals can get to work. And those healthcare professionals who are dealing with a virus that they didn't even understand, they still don't understand. And they're there working, many of them, 7 days a week. So yes, we're tired, but look at what others among us have to do and the challenge they're under, and how they are stepping up. And who am I to complain about being tired when so many people are doing such heroic efforts? And I also think this is going to be transformative and formative for society. You think about our children. I have my daughters here with me. This is the first time they've faced a real national adversity, right? Oh, you have a whole new generation who have never lived through anything like this. They never went to war. They were never drafted. They never went through a national crisis. And this is going to shape them. And I can tell you just from having my daughters with me, yeah, they're hurt. They're scared. But they are also learning through this. And at the end of the day, they're going to be better people for it. And they're going to be better citizens for it. I believe that, because they're rising to the occasion. And as we go through this, let's make sure that we're teaching them the right lessons and the right response. And those lessons and that response are the lessons that we get from our better angels. And during this difficult time, let's listen to the voices of our better angels as individuals, as families, as a community, and as a society. We're going to get through this. The only question is how we get through it and when we get through it. But let's make sure at the end of the day that we can say we are the better for it. And our children are the better for it. And I believe they will be.
All right. And then he opens himself up for questions. So those press briefings, they're all available on YouTube pretty much. They get live streamed in the morning and then you can check them out anytime during the day. If you're looking for, you know, a more maybe comprehensive view of what's going on a day-to-day basis, definitely in the state of New York. But in general, I think it's fair to assume that a lot of those trends are going to just present themselves throughout the rest of the United States and the other potential epicenters that might arise out of this. So I highly recommend checking out his press conferences. I always walk away from them feeling like there's someone at the helm of something somewhere that knows what the fuck they're talking about, number one. Number two, has established ties to officials that really know what they're talking about. There's a point in that press conference that I didn't put in here, but towards the beginning, he, you know, does a shout out to Fauci, basically just saying Fauci and him, or Fauci's given him just a invaluable friendship right now, honestly, and line of communication that's pretty much always open, and he can rely on him to provide him with information that he can trust and he can impart onto his people that, you know, he knows is going to be productive and gets people going in the right direction, at least mentally. And I think it's really, really nice to see that he's established connections with people who actually know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. And it's not to be lost on us that those are the same people that Trump seems to distance himself from and talks shit on whenever they come out and do their professional thing, you know, which is just a bummer. It is a huge bummer. And I'm really, really happy that at least someone like Fauci still remains in that realm, at least to some degree, in the White House. And I hope he can stay there as long as possible. If not, people like Cuomo and, you know, our Governor Newsom, and I know there's other amazing governors around the country too, they give me a lot of hope. Thank God that states have some sort of autonomy over themselves currently, or else can you imagine how bad that would fucking suck? I am very appreciative right now of the fact that we have governors and individual entities that get to do at least something to try to retain, you know, control over our own destiny, at least in some degree. But with that being said, it is impossible to have a entirely effective response without the coordination and cooperation and competency of a federal government. And the fact that we don't really seem to have that right now is really scary and sad. But hope. I feel hopeful today. I'm settling in a little bit more personally day by day. Cuomo talked a lot about this being a marathon, not a sprint. That is cliche, but very fitting. And I think keeping on keeping on day by day is really the only way to get through this stuff. I can't wait to see some of y'all at our happy hour on Friday, our virtual happy hour, obviously. That's for patrons. I know AG's plugging that, but I'm really excited to see you all because this fucking sucks. Not seeing people. And I'm very lonely. So I hope everyone's doing okay. I have no bidet updates. It's just been sitting there half installed, just a uneven lump of toilet seat currently sitting and existing in my bathroom right now. Still no more toilet paper. I think we're going to venture into the online space today, see if we can have any more luck finding anything on the interwebs. That's all I got, you know? Everybody, I love you. Thank you for being you. And also, hit us up on Twitter. It's fun interacting with y'all on Twitter. We have nothing else. Okay. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks so much, Jordan, for giving us that information and playing those clips. I love listening to Cuomo. I listen to him every morning now when I walk the dog. We will be right back after this quick break, and I'll have a bunch of news for you, so stick around.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey everybody, it's AG, and this episode of Daily Beans is brought to you by the great people at Third Love, my very good friends. I am obsessed with them. They make the most comfortable bras you will ever wear. Third Love's bras are tailored to your individual shape, and many women, including myself, and this has been true for my whole life, I am in between cup sizes, and that makes it really hard to shop off the rack. Not that I enjoy going to those stores anyway, where Mandy chases you around, not our Mandy, but you know, a Mandy chases you around with a tape measure and then throws you in a dark room with a box of ugly bras that never fit, and it's very uncomfortable. But now, Third Love, you don't have to deal with that anymore. And they have, they're an industry leader. They have 80 sizes. So they have half cup sizes, which, you know, I feel recognized and I feel seen. And I love that because I would either have that cup gap or I would have too much spillage, which, you know, some people like, not me. So anyway, it can make it very difficult to find the perfect fit if you're in between sizes, but not with Third Love. Check out their Fit Finder quiz online. In just a minute or so, you can find the ideal bra designed to fit you perfectly. They use your combined information with data from millions of women who've taken the quiz. They use that metadata to factor both cup size and breast shape to find the exact perfect bra. Every Third Love bra is made with lightweight, super thin memory foam cups that mold to your shape perfectly. And their straps don't dig, they don't slip, and there's no tag, so there's no itchiness. With Third Love's Perfect Fit Promise, this is amazing. You have 60 full days to try it out. Wash it, wear it, try it. And if it's not the perfect fit and you don't love it 100%, returns and exchanges are free and easy. And Third Love donates all their gently used bras to people in need. And so far, they've donated over $15 million in bras, supporting charities across the United States. So Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. Right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/dailybeans now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/dailybeans for 15% off today. Okay, everybody, welcome back. So today, a record 3.3 million Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week, according to the Labor Department. And of course, as we know, we had a story yesterday that Ohio was told not to report their unemployment numbers. So they're reporting 3.3 million at the Labor Department. That is the biggest jump in jobless claims in history, since we've been keeping track. It surpasses by far the previous record week. We lost 695,000 jobs 1 week in 1982. It's estimated that it's 3.3, that's four times as many the previous record. It's estimated we could lose 40 million jobs by April. People are waiting hours on the phone to file unemployment claims, and websites for unemployment in like New York and Oregon and many other states have crashed under the heavy weight of the traffic. Our unemployment rate was 3.5% in February, all-time low. It's expected to jump to 5.5% in March in 1 month, a level we haven't seen since 2015, since Obama put us on the track to the decreased unemployment rate. Federal Reserve Chair and non-economist Jerome Powell told the Today Show we may very well be in a recession right now. Despite these numbers, though, and likely because we know this isn't being caused by economic issues like the Great Recession in 2008 with subprime mortgage packages and the insurance companies folded, we had to do the TARP as an economic problem. This time, this is something we're doing on purpose. And so the stock market hasn't really, I mean, except for that initial hit, it's been going up. It got another boost today, 1,351 points. Of course, the stock market is not the economy, as we know. And this is a perfect example of that with the stock market jumping almost 1,400 points, yet we're reporting 3.3 million new unemployment claims. Likely on the news of the stimulus bill is probably what's keeping the stock market afloat right now, because rich people are going to be fine. It appears as though the markets know rich folks are going to be fine and that this unemployment is temporary. But we'll see if other factors that could follow, such as housing, which has dipped 4% in February, manufacturing, the auto industry, supply chain stuff, the negative impact this is having on that. We'll see if those indicators have a deeper or longer lasting impact on the economy. Usually at two quarters, you have to show two quarters of a significant loss to show a recession. There's a lot of different variables and ways people measure that, but we will see. We'll see how it goes. Now, a lot of workers are not allowed to apply for unemployment benefits right now, meaning the true number of unemployment claims could be depressed. It might be lower than we think. Could be far higher than the 3.3 million that's being reported. Self-employed workers, gig economy workers, undocumented workers, students, people who worked fewer than 6 months last year, typically not eligible to apply for unemployment insurance in most states. So we have to keep that in mind when looking at this 3.3 million number. Though the stimulus bill now will allow gig economy workers to apply, so those numbers could catch up and add to the claims numbers. So we might see that go up a little more significantly. And that also depends on if these individual states can handle the UI claims. I mean, you know, like I told you, the New York, Oregon, these websites are crashing hours on the phone in line, and we still haven't even gotten to the point where gig economy laid off workers can apply for these benefits. Labor economists, however, are worried about the speed of the checks and the ability to apply for unemployment. And they're worried that folks won't get their unemployment money or stimulus checks until after April 1st rent is due or mortgages are due. So we'll see what happens. It's not looking good. In other news, Abbott, a company that manufactures and ships COVID tests, received an emergency use authorization from the FDA for its diagnostic tests and announced goals to ramp up U.S. production to 1 million tests per week by the end of March. Abbott has already shipped 150,000 tests, and it plans to work with federal authorities and health systems to deploy additional testing hardware. Damon Kowalski, Abbott's head of molecular diagnostics, says, quote, "Our scientists, many of whom worked on Abbott's first HIV and Zika tests, have worked around the clock to develop these molecular tests. Providing people at the front lines of this pandemic with critical tests will help ensure proper care for patients and help protect our communities." And a lot of places, I'm hearing anecdotally, are maybe have, you know, the ability to test in the lab, but they're out of swabs, you know, a $3 swab, and they can't do the test, or they're out of PPEs to protect themselves from administering the tests. And that's putting our healthcare workers at risk. So we'll see how it goes. There was some really scary reporting coming out of a hospital in New York. ER doctor there saying, we don't have what we need. It's pretty apocalyptic. So, you know, we still might have a week or two to catch up on the hospital surge. And experts are saying we're going to peak on this in 3 to 5 weeks. I've heard anywhere from 3 weeks to May 10th. So could get worse before it gets better, probably will, but keep doing what we're doing, right? And I'll get to more of that later. And from NBC News Today, Trump is pushing the UN Security Council to call attention to and acknowledge that the origins of the coronavirus are in China. And that triggered a stalemate on talks among Security Council nations over a joint declaration or resolution about the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. wants the declaration to explicitly state that the virus originated in Wuhan and when. This has enraged China's diplomats to the U.N. The language the U.S. proposed in various drafts and edits that have been circulated among the countries in the U.N. Council, Security Council, are trying to reference, quote, "the outbreak of the coronavirus disease in Wuhan, Hubei province, in the People's Republic of China in November 2019. They want that specific language in there. And then another draft from the U.S. encouraged the U.N. to build on lessons from the past, quote, "especially from the severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, COVID, coronavirus outbreak originating in the Guangdong province in the People's Republic of China in 2011. So the language in these drafts hit a wall with China, no pun, which China has veto-wielding power in the U.N. Security Council. And their diplomats are accusing the U.S. of irresponsible practices in a blistering email to other nations' diplomats that NBC got a hold of. They said, quote, "We are astonished by the choice of the United States to use this opportunity for politicizing the outbreak and blaming China, which we strongly oppose. The groundless accusations of malicious fabrication from the U.S. aim at shirking its own responsibilities, which severely poisoned the atmosphere of global cooperation in containing the outbreak." So they're taking hits at the United States as well. The order to include the language in the U.S. drafts came from the National Security Council, which directed the U.S. mission to the U.N. to put that language in there with the support, full support of Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. I have to wonder what Trump's motive is to insist the world formally recognize the virus started in Wuhan. Although there was a class action lawsuit filed from Boca Raton, Florida. Everything weird happens in Boca Raton. if you listen to our other podcast, Mueller, She Wrote, there's a lot of Russians buying a lot of property down there, if you know what I'm saying. And so they're filing a class action lawsuit to sue China to cover expenses for businesses and the government for the coronavirus outbreak. So maybe somehow declaring officially that it came from Wuhan is a way to hold them monetarily responsible. I don't know. I don't know what Trump is thinking. But Trump's unwillingness to acknowledge the seriousness of the epidemic, illustrated by his recent calls for the country to reopen by Easter, it'll be beautiful, beautiful Easter churches, that is filtering down to governors, including the governor of Mississippi, Governor Tate Reeves, who is rejecting calls. He rejected calls today and yesterday for a statewide shelter-at-home order, a measure of caution, obviously, against the spread of COVID-19 being rapidly deployed next door in Louisiana, which is the world's fastest growing outbreak. And also, a lot of other places in the United States are doing this. Someone asked the governor why the state was not emulating China, the first country to detect COVID-19 and the first to control the spread of the virus. And he said, Mississippi's never going to be China. Mississippi's never going to be North Korea. That's how Reeves responded. And he added, when looking at the numbers China's putting out, claiming they have no new cases over a period of time, I'm not entirely sure we can trust that data. I think he means those data, but whatever. Also, social media is circulating some political attack ads against Donald Trump, all based on his inept handling of the outbreak. And if you haven't seen the one from the Joe Biden campaign, I tweeted it. It's my pinned tweet on the at Mueller She Wrote account. Check it out. It's pretty amazing. Those ads are circulating on social media. And now Trump's reelection campaign is threatening legal action against local television stations in Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin if they don't pull an anti-Trump ad run by Democrats that uses clips of the president talking about the coronavirus outbreak, using his own words against him. The campaign says the ad is false. Everything I say is false. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's the Priorities USA Action Fund. It's a Democratic super PAC that created a 30-second spot and supported Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They responded by soliciting financial contributions to keep the ad on the airwaves after Trump sent them a cease and desist letter. Trump's campaign said the commercial contains the false assertion that Trump called the coronavirus a hoax. We've all seen the tape, sir, or guy. The Trump campaign has issued a cease and desist, like I said, demanding the stations pull the ad or face a lawsuit. Ooh. I'm sure they're shaking in their boots, buddy. Those are swing states, though. Those are battleground states. And so it was Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania that got Trump the election by less than 80,000 votes total in 2016, although it was a landslide. No, it was not. Let's see here. There's a task force briefing today at the White House. Don't watch it. It was stupid. Burks and Fauci and Pence and Trump were there. Trump spoke for a long time. He tried to read. It was hard to watch. He talked about how he spoke to the leaders of the G20. And then maybe because he's fascinated just by finding out who's in the G20, he read off the names of all of the G20 leaders. It took him a while. Google that clip. It's pretty hilarious. He does that thing where he has subtle accents. You know, Puerto Rico. I mean, that's not in the G20, but you know, when he did that, when he was like, Puerto Rico, it's just absolutely ridiculous. He totally botched Erdogan. He called him Erdogan. He pronounced it phonetically. Who thought this was a good idea? Who sat down and said, let's have Trump read all of the names of foreign leaders, 20 foreign leaders, and the head of the WHO, et cetera? Maybe it was a joke. Maybe it was like, I'm going to get him to read these. Watch how funny it is. I can't think of any reason you would want him to speak more, especially trying to pronounce names of foreign leaders. Anyway, fun clip to watch. Everything else he said was bullshit. Don't worry about it. He's repeating the same shit over and over again. Talks about the Chinese virus, says some racist shit. But then an Asian American asked him, but don't you want to protect Asian Americans? He's like, yeah, I love Asian Americans. It was just dumb. Barrage of false claims. He denied a conversation he had with Inslee where Inslee said he doesn't need a backup team. He needs, who'd he say? Who's the guy? Who's the number one? Who's the fucking guy? Tom Brady. I think he's a Buccaneer now or something. He's moved. I don't follow him that closely. Jordan would know. We'll ask her the next time we're talking to her live. But he said, I don't need a backup team. I need Tom Brady. And he denied, Trump denied that conversation happened and then acknowledged it happened. And then he said, everyone wants the country to reopen. I don't. No one does that. And he said, all restaurants should be open. Just a ton of lies. Don't listen to him. Listen to Cuomo. Listen to Newsom. Listen to Fauci. Listen to the World Health Organization. So once Trump left, they cut away. Pence got up and then they just pulled away from the press conference. They need to stop airing them. Outside of the comedy and ridiculous claims and sad mispronunciations, these briefings are not only completely useless, they're actually dangerous. So hats off to Seattle Public Radio. We mentioned this yesterday for refusing to air them. I hope this picks up traction. I want these to not be aired. They did come back when Fauci was up. Fauci went over a timeline for a vaccine, reiterating it was not going to be here quickly. Said there's multiple phases, went over the phases. We have to make sure that any vaccine and doesn't do more harm than good, because sometimes if you have a bad vaccine, it can make people sick. And they don't want to do that. So that's why it takes, you know, it just basically explained why it takes 12 months, you know, to do these trials. And he stuck to his guns on the timeline, despite Trump's rosy outlook and his idea that the vaccine would come faster than any other vaccine. It was just... It was hard to watch. Don't watch them. But despite the whitewashing of this pandemic by the Trump task force, we have 237 new deaths in the United States, deadliest day so far in the United States. And in the United States, 81,321 people, as of this recording, are known to have been infected, including more than 1,000 deaths, more than China. We just pulled ahead of China right before I sat down to record this. We had passed Italy earlier in the day. And we're far ahead of any other country. We're number one. This is according to data gathered by the New York Times, and now CNN has picked it up, MSNBC. And we should also keep in mind that, you know, if pulling ahead of China, China has a much higher population than we do, like four times as many people. So our infection rate is now, the rate is well above theirs and has been. This will continue. Some say it might reach a max in 3 weeks. Other experts are saying it won't be until May 10th, somewhere in that time frame. So keep that in mind as we go forward and these numbers continue to go up. They're going to go up and they're going to go up fast. And things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. So please keep doing what I know you're all doing. You stay at home, wash your hands 6 feet apart. Only go outside if you need to. If the president tells you to go to church, ignore him. Listen to the doctors. Listen to the World Health Organization. Do not listen to Trump and the billionaires, except Mark Cuban. Listen to him, who will just tell you not to listen to people like him. But that is the best thing you can do. All our efforts will not be realized here in the coming weeks. And it might seem shitty and dark. Like you might be like, I'm doing all this and look at these numbers are going up. But that's the lag time. That's what it's going to do. Not only a lag in testing, but in the incubation period. And the hit that hospitals are going to take in a week or 2 weeks from now is going to be worse than what we're seeing now as we move toward that apex of the curve somewhere between 3 and 6 weeks from now. So just keep your chin up. You're making it so that the apex doesn't happen in a month and a half and 2 million people die. That's what you're doing. I might be just trying to convince myself more than anybody else, but that the numbers will get worse despite everything that we're doing. And we just have to keep doing it and know that what we're doing is actually making a difference. It just might not seem like it. We'll be right back to discuss your stimulus check. There's a lot of people with questions about the tax. Is it taxable? If I owe the IRS or if I have a federal lien, are they going to, you know, take my money away or keep it, call it a wash? Are they going to, you know, how much money will I get? And if I have kids, what if I'm a resident alien? What if I'm a gig economy worker? What if I drive for Uber? Am I going to get this money? And I have all of your answers with Francine Lipman, tax expert, right after this break. You don't want to miss it. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's AG, and this portion of Daily Beans is brought to you by TheZebra.com. Nowadays, I am more careful not to waste money. Very careful not to waste money. Not that I was a big, like, money waster before, but I learned recently Americans are overpaying on car insurance by over $21 billion. Probably because searching for a better deal can take hours and typically results in a barrage of unwanted spam calls. That is until now, thanks to TheZebra.com. TheZebra.com is the nation's leading car insurance comparison site because it is the only place you can compare quotes side by side from over 100 companies and choose the best one for you. and it only takes 90 seconds or less. Plus, they will never sell your information to the spammers, so you won't get all those unwanted calls or emails. You just answer a few questions on a simple, fast form, and they will find you the best rates and coverage in your state. TechCrunch calls the Zebra Kayak for auto insurance. The best part is that it's completely free, and if you have a barking dog in the background, you can save up to $670 per year using thezebra.com. I know we could all use that extra cash right now, seriously. So check out thezebra.com. What have you got to lose? How much can you save on car and home insurance? And they do home insurance too. Go today and start saving at thezebra.com/dailybeans. That's thezebra.com/dailybeans. It is spelled thezebra.com/thedailybeans. Woof woof. All right, everybody, welcome back. And joining us today to answer your questions about your stimulus checks or your lack thereof and the tax implications is tax and poverty law professor at UNLV and the Nevada Tax Commissioner, Francine Lipman. Thanks for joining us on such short notice. Thanks for coming on the Daily Beans.
Delighted to help. And I just want to give a little bit disclaimer. Of course, anything I say today is from me as an individual and not me as a Nevada tax commissioner or a UNLV law professor. So it's just my thoughts about what happened last night.
Okay, great. Same. Anything I say, obviously, is, you know, I'm a comedian and I'm a public health doctor. So I, you know, just take it how you will. But as the details about the stimulus package passed by the Senate yesterday trickle out, we have been inundated with questions about the stimulus checks. So first, can you give us just a really basic overview about who gets the checks and how much they get?
Sure. Well, of course, as you know, the Senate passed it last night, but the House has not yet passed it. And so while we all expect they will, that my understanding is because of the coronavirus, that vote has been delayed until tomorrow. And so once they pass it, the president has indicated he'll sign it into law, and then all the moving parts will start racing to the finish. So the basic answer is that all adults will get $1,200, and then qualifying children, the adults who are claiming these qualifying children on their tax returns, will get $500. So that's the short answer, but the longer answer is these dollar amounts are phased out to zero if your adjusted gross income for a single person exceeds $75,000, and it's phased out actually $5 for every $100 over that threshold down to zero. So the phase out for a single person is between $75,000 and $99,000. For a married couple filing jointly, it would be $150,000 to $198,000. And again, that's adjusted gross income. And for someone who files as head of household, it's $112,500 increase to, that would be another $24,000, so that's $136,500, if I get the math right. So it's complicated, as most tax things are. So what the government is going to do is, this is a refundable tax credit actually for 2020. But because no one, of course, has filed a 2020 income tax return, because we're just in the first quarter of 2020, they're going to estimate what your 2020 refund is based upon the last return you filed. So that could either be 2019 or 2018. So they're going to estimate it based upon those fact patterns as filed. And then when you file your 2020 income tax return, you'll effectively reconcile that prepayment of your 2020 federal credit, and you could get more if your income, for example, was which maybe wouldn't be surprisingly given the precipice we're standing on for a recession, or hopefully not worse, but even potentially a depression, your 2020 income could be significantly below these thresholds, and then you would get the credit when you file your 2020 tax return in 2021.
Ah, but also on the flip side, that could, you might owe. So like if in 2018, I made as a single person $70,000, I would get a $1,200 check. But if in 2020, I made $180,000, which is over the single person threshold, I would have to give that money back.
You know what? The good news is the way we read the statute, and again, this is literally passed in the middle of the night last night, tax experts from many different places across the country agree that you do not have to pay it back.
Ah, good news. And also, my understanding is the check itself is not taxable income.
Yes, it is not taxable income, and that is because it is effectively a reduction of your federal income tax. So it's a reduction of a an expense that's not deductible.
Okay, so if you lost your job in 2020 and you make less in 2020 than your 2018 or 2019 filing shows, you might get that rebate. You might not qualify for the money now, but you could get that money when you file in 2021.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yes.
Possibly when you don't need it anymore.
Well, we hope you don't need it. But, you know, we don't wish this on anyone, but it's tempting to jumpstart the economy. Another interesting thing is they're going to look back at your 2018 or 2019 tax return. And to the extent you authorized electronic deposit, they're going to use that information to deposit this payment. So that will expedite the transfer of the money. And so folks who have automatic deposit on record will likely get it relatively quickly, maybe within a month.
Yeah, unfortunately, those of us who have gone through a divorce since that time, their exes are going to be seeing that in their bank account. So
that really does complicate things. And, you know, that's a great example of that this is a lot easier said than done. If the last tax return on record is your 2018, because you haven't yet filed your 2019, and we all know we all got a postponement of the due date until July 15th, so many people perhaps have not filed, hopefully that bank information is still correct. I know I work with taxpayers who move around a lot, and their bank accounts numbers change.
Yeah, and people need to be wary that if you electronically filed and got a direct deposit in 2018 and you haven't filed 2019 yet, that is where the money's going.
Yep, and if I have experienced the bad luck of having an automatic deposit bounce from an account because perhaps it was closed for a taxpayer, or perhaps there was a transposition of a number, and you eventually will get that in a hard paper check, it's just going to delay everything.
Yeah, and I haven't seen that there's a way to opt out of that direct deposit and just receive a paper check, but who knows? The language could change.
Yeah, I have not seen that. What I have, the statute itself does say that within 15 days, I think it is, of distributing the money, the IRS is going to send you a letter describing what the amount that they sent. And hopefully, if it's in a check or automatic deposit, and they will also give you information if you don't receive it. Mm-hmm. So there will be a way to follow up on it.
Well, that's good. And I just can't imagine that the IRS is staffed for this right now. I don't even understand the means testing at all. And I also noticed that there's no mention of a cost of living or a COLA consideration. So a person in San Francisco would get the same as a person in Wyoming. And it's likely that the person in San Francisco makes more than the person in Wyoming, but may have smaller or no savings because of the cost of living expense. They're assuming that everyone who makes more, a single person who makes more than $75,000 a year, or I should say $150,000 a year, is considered too wealthy. But $150,000 a year in San Francisco is working class.
Yep, absolutely. And another important thing I want to point out is that in order to get this payment, you must have a Social Security number. And so, and it's not only you that must have a Social Security number, but if you filed married filing jointly, you and your spouse must have a Social Security number, and any qualifying children must also have a Social Security number. So there is that, that was not how the House bill was originally. That is how the Senate bill, and that is what ended up in the final statute. So anyone who is an ITIN holder, someone who does not qualify for a Social Security number, but someone who has an individual taxpayer identification number and who has been paying taxes into Social Security and Medicare, they do not qualify for this.
As do non-resident aliens without a green card. So that also...
Exactly. And so what is interesting, there's a carve-out, and that is if it's a married couple filing jointly and one of the members of the couple is in the military, and then the other taxpayer, the spouse, doesn't have a Social Security number, they do qualify. So okay. Private Ryan and his spouse would qualify.
Understand. And what happens if you owe taxes or you owe the government? There's some sort of federal lien against you. Are they going to take it out of this check?
The good news is no. It looks like there will not be offsets against this payment.
Yeah, that is good news. Now, what about my parents? They're on Social Security. This bill says they're eligible to receive a payment based on the income requirements. And obviously, they are fall below that and they don't file taxes. So would this check is not taxable. So this check would not force them to have to file taxes and they would get these checks. Is that correct?
So it's very interesting because, as you point out, there are a lot of people who do not have a filing requirement. And this does require individuals to file a tax return. However, not senior citizens who are receiving Social Security benefits. So if you are receiving Social Security benefits, they are going to go to that database and send out checks based upon Social Security records. So we'll see how that works. And they are also, I believe, going to use the electronic database from, so most people get their Social Security checks automatically deposited. So I believe they're going to try to use that database as well.
Now, what if you're a non-filer because you don't make enough money?
Good question. So if you are a non-filer, what you're going to have to do is file in 2020 and 2021. So you could imagine tax returns with very little income and getting this credit.
Dang. So what's the cutoff these days? Is it 8,000, 9,000 something?
It's a little bit more than that, actually. So the standard deduction for a single person for 2020 is up to $12,400.
Okay.
There are a lot of folks out there. Now, it is interesting. So a lot of parents, of course, claim children as dependents on their tax return. So if that child that's claimed as a dependent on their tax return is under 17, that child will qualify the parents to get $500 per child. And by the way, there's no cap on the number of children. However, if the child is 17 or older, or if it is somebody else, for example, some individuals are able to claim their parents as a dependent, or you might have an adult child who is disabled and you're able to claim them, there is no tax benefit. There's no recovery check for those individuals.
Interesting. And so my comedian friends who are single and make less than $10,000 a year, who don't file taxes because they don't meet the minimum standard requirement to file taxes, if they want this money, they have to file tax. They have to file a 1040 in 2020.
They'll file Form 1040 in 2021, so just about a year from now.
But they can't get relief now.
No, they cannot. And what we want to make sure come a year from now, we want to make sure that we make it very easy for these folks to file, and so they don't have to go to paid preparers and lose some of their $1,200 benefit.
Right. And of course, if they're making that little, they should apply for these new unemployment benefits that'll be coming up. I don't know. I mean, there's a whole different story there, and we're not going to talk about that. I'm sure they base it on your past income. And if you don't have much, then I think it's $600 a week for 4 months. But I'm just not sure at this point. And we'll look at that final language and maybe have a different discussion on a different day. Well, I think that you've answered all of my questions. Some of this sucks and some of it's good news, just like everything that comes out of the government. So.
Well, the good news is hopefully this is going to be set in motion, and so we can stimulate the economy. I do want to encourage people to think about filing your 2019 income tax return if you're going to get a refund, because that refund's just sitting there in the federal government's coffers, and we want you to get it to stimulate this economy. And if it is not going to disqualify you for this other recovery check, go ahead and do that quickly, especially if you want to give them your bank information. So maybe you can slide that in before they start generating these recovery checks.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. If you don't owe more than the stimulus check that you would get, file now and get your banking information right and make that happen. I wish I could. I wish I had time. I've already asked for an extension. So,
right. So what's interesting, just to let your listeners know, if you go to the IRS website, there's a link there to something called Free File. And if you go from the IRS website, you click on that link, it leads you into a bunch of different software packages by for-profit companies that have agreed to be able to provide free tax preparation and free electronic filing software that you can use to quickly generate, hopefully, your 2019 tax refund. And then maybe if you do it today, you can get that information out there so that the U.S. Treasury can use that to deposit automatically, hopefully, your full recovery check.
Yeah. And if you do owe, you have an additional, I think, 90 days to pay it without interest or penalty, and you'll get your check. You'll get your stimulus check if you meet the criteria to come under the income requirements.
Phase out, right.
Yeah. So,
yep.
So it sounds like there's really no downside. I mean, except in maybe some extreme cases to get your 2019 in as fast as you can. I mean, obviously, unless you're a small business, you're doing a Schedule A, you're itemizing, you're going through a whole bunch of stuff. But because of that, now we have that delay in payment with no interest or penalties. Even if you owe, you don't have to pay yet. So might be worth it.
Right, absolutely. And I guess the one downside is if your 2018 is out there and your adjusted gross income was low on 2018, you might not want to file 2019 if your AGI went up significantly, because then you wouldn't get this stimulus check.
Yep, and those of us with student loans based on adjusted gross income know how to play that game. So,
yes, absolutely. A lot depends on your tax return now, so yeah. There's a lot of moving parts.
All right. Well, thank you so much for answering our questions. Where can people go if they need additional information? You said the IRS website is a good place.
The IRS website is a good place. And again, all of this is so dynamic that I would suggest you follow a couple folks on Twitter. I know you're on Twitter, and some great people to follow are Tax Girl. And she writes for Forbes, and she also writes for Bloomberg. And I'm on Twitter at NarfNample, which is my name backwards, in case you didn't figure that out. And follow us on Twitter, and we're just all trying to keep up on this and give you guys good information.
So that's Fran Lipman backwards, Narf Lipman.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Awesome.
There's a long story behind that, but I won't digress.
I assume Fran Lipman was taken. Thank you very much, UNLV Tax and Poverty Law Professor, Nevada Tax Commissioner Francine Lipman. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with Amanda Reeder and the good news right after this quick message. So stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's AG, and this Helping of Daily Beans is brought to you by Daily Harvest. I love it so much. Oh, my gosh, my freezer is packed with Daily Harvest meals. I try to eat healthy. Getting enough fruits and vegetables is hard because I'm always on the go. I eat paleo. I intermittently fast, so I have huge gaps in my diet. So I have to definitely fill those gaps with the fruits and veggies I need. And so I also like what's easy and close at hand. And I realized I need to make it as easy as possible. Not just to snack on healthy foods, but, you know, to cook it in like 5 minutes or less, because I'm just so busy here. So even for my quickest meals, I love Daily Harvest. First of all, they deliver the food you want to eat. It's delicious, but you know, and you don't have time to make it, and they deliver it right to your door. They make it easy to eat more fruits and vegetables, like I was talking about those gaps in my diet, because they have thoughtfully sourced chef-crafted foods that can be prepared in 5 minutes or less. I love it, 5 minutes or less. And they work directly with farms to harvest organic fruits and vegetables at their peak, and then they freeze them within 24 hours to lock in the nutrients, so everything stays fresh until you are ready to enjoy it. You can choose from more than 65 different options. They have smoothies, hearty soups, I love their soups, harvest bowls, overnight oats, they have so many different options. Each recipe takes one step to prepare, but you can add your own flair if you want. You can add your favorite milk or almond milk to blend up a smoothie, or you can top something with some avocado or a fried egg. It's really, really, really easy, and I make the wheatgrass banana cucumber smoothie a lot. I love it. And I really love the cauliflower rice and pesto harvest bowl. It's delicious. It's like pesto risotto. You will love it. So whether you're at your desk, on a hike, or on your way to the gym, don't go there. They're closed right now. Daily Harvest is the easiest way to have a delicious and nutritious meal or snack. So go to dailyharvest.com and enter promo code DAILYBEANS to get $25 off your first box. That's a huge savings. That's promo code DAILYBEANS for $25 off your first box at dailyharvest.com. Again, that's dailyharvest.com. You'll be glad you did. Well, we'll blow it on. Good news is on the way. All right, everybody, welcome back. Joining me for the good news block is our good news hero, Amanda Reeder. Amanda, how are you?
I'm good. I'm coming to you live from my bathroom.
Excellent. How's the dog?
The dog is good. I've got him snuggled up next to me so that he does not bark. Because for those of you who have schnauzer mixes, you know how insanely loud they are and how much they love to bark. So we're making do.
Well, good. And it, you know, hey, if he does, cool. Then the people get to hear. So
exactly. Podcasting in the age of corona.
Yeah, totally. I have a couple good news stories before we get to our listener good news stories. I thought you should know the Democrats actually held up the stimulus bill last night for 2 hours and would not budge unless they included language to ban Trump and his family from getting any stimulus benefits. They were about to approve the deal when Chuck Schumer hit the pause button, realizing the language had gone walkies. It went missing. Republicans and Dems had agreed to that language, but he noticed that it was absent in the final bill. And for 2 hours, Schumer held everything up as the stricter language was inserted back into the bill, and then the Senate passed it. And he said, "We told Republicans it was unacceptable to omit strict prohibitions on Trump businesses having access to the Treasury lending, as well as critical transparency measures, and that we would hold up the bill until they included it in the final text. They relented, and the provisions were added." Now, the adopted language was meant to address a fucking loophole in the original language that barred money from going to businesses that were at least 20% owned by presidents or their children, their spouses, or their in-laws. And that language would have allowed money to go to entities that the family collectively, but not individually, owned at least 20% of. So Kushner Holdings would have gotten some, Trump Organization. And lawmakers didn't want it to seem like Kushner was getting a carve out. So the two sides agreed to close that loophole. But whoa, it was magically fucking missing from the final text. Republicans say it was an honest mistake. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because according to Politico, the final language was also missing. The final text was also missing language that required Steve Mnuchin to disclose where the Treasury funds were going every 7 days. I'm sure that was just another clerical oversight, too. Right. But Warren and Schumer had pushed for that language. So while this final bill, I think, falls short in a lot of places, we owe some thanks, great vote of thanks, to Schumer, Warren, and Nancy Pelosi for making sure those loopholes were closed before the final bill passed. And on Tuesday, you'll love this, Amanda. The government in England set a goal to recruit 250,000 volunteer helpers to deal with the coronavirus outbreak. So Tuesday night, they asked for 250,000 volunteers. By Wednesday morning, they had surpassed 250,000. And right now, the number of people who have volunteered to help NHS in its fight against coronavirus has passed 500,000. There's 504,000 people now that have stepped forward, including 11,000 former medics and more than 24,000 final year nurses, like student nurses and student medics, who will also join them. And
I love that.
And finally, this is good news, and I know that you followed this story, Amanda. I certainly did, since 2016. A federal judge has handed down a major victory for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of North Dakota Wednesday, ruling that the Army Corps of Engineers violated the National Environmental Policy Act by approving federal permits for the Dakota Access Pipeline. So,
hell yeah. We've been getting so many tweets about that. I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the USACE must complete now a full environmental impact study of the pipeline, including full consideration of concerns presented by the Standing Rock Tribe. And then Mike Faith had this to say. He said, "After years of commitment to defending our water and earth, we welcome this news of significant legal win. It's humbling to see how actions we took 4 years ago to defend our ancestral homeland continue to inspire national conversations about how our choices ultimately affect this planet." So that was Mike Faith of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And one last quick thing. Amy Klobuchar's husband, who had been hospitalized and was on a ventilator with COVID-19, has taken a good turn, and he's been released to recover at home. So good news for the Klobuchar family.
That's such great news. Yeah. Well, I think especially one of the hardest things that's like hitting a lot of families right now is that you can't be with your loved ones when they're ill in the hospital. And I saw a clip of Amy Klobuchar on the news the other night, and she was like, "I can't go be by his side," you know. So, and I could just see the pain in her face. So I'm so happy to hear that he's taken a positive turn. Yeah, especially after all she's been through in the last year, being out on the campaign trail.
Yeah, it had been really hard, so I'm glad for them. So now, Amanda, tell us our listener good news.
We have been getting, honestly, so much. Even though I haven't been on the show the last few days, I've been helping put together the good news block, and you guys have just made me smile amidst a lot of, you know, personal sadness and kind of adapting to all of this. So thank you guys so much. I'm going to read a couple of them now. This is from someone who would like to remain anonymous. And they said, "I work at a small tech company. Without getting into too much detail, our technology is designed to allow organizations to do things more effectively and efficiently remotely. And one of our areas of expertise is helping people with remote working. Starting last week, we began proactively reaching out to all of our existing clients, as well as prospective clients and new clients, volunteering to help them if they needed anything during this crisis. I'm proud to say that we are beginning multiple projects for free with different types of companies to assist them in quickly adapting to their newly expanded workforce. Our COO says we are doing this because it is the right thing to do. I've personally heard thanks from other small businesses who have been harder impacted by this crisis, so it's good to know we're making a difference. None of us at my company have the skills to be a doctor or a healthcare worker, so we know our skills aren't as important as the individuals literally in the front lines, but it's good to know that even in our little tech company, we can help other businesses, and that makes me really proud. Awesome. I loved that. Yeah. This is from Quinn, and I wish I could show you guys the pictures. I'll tweet it on the Daily Beans account, but this was an awesome tweet from Quinn, and she said, folks around our neighborhood are putting up signs in their yard with various jokes, riddles, and pearls of wisdom to entertain people out on their walks and make them smile. It's just so sweet. People are literally putting like joke signs on their front lawn for people as they go for walks.
Yeah, in our neighborhood, they have people putting like hearts and stars taped into their inside of the windows, and kids are going out on scavenger hunts, and when they find a heart or a star, they get points or something. It's cute.
That's really cute. I really love this one. This is from Rebecca Throop, and she said, people are actually talking now about how store clerks, gas station workers, and food service employees deserve better pay because they are literally essential to our society and economy. And this is, you know, it's something that is getting to be much more in the mainstream right now as a conversation. And so I'm really happy about that.
I know. I can just picture like, that is what I've been saying for 20 years.
I don't know if you covered it on the show yesterday, but Bernie helped get provisions for contract workers and gig workers in there for unemployment. So that made me really happy. Speaking of that.
Yeah, I haven't been able to verify that it was Bernie. I've been researching that. I know that was part of his plan. It was also part of Warren's plan. The only thing I've been able to find so far that's for sure is that Schumer told Morning Joe that it was Warren that got the unemployment provisions put in for the amount or the dollar amount or something like that. So that's all I've been able to find about which senators contributed what. But I have seen those stories and heard those anecdotes about that. What I really wanted them to get in that Bernie was proposing was the $2,000 for every American, regardless of how much money you make. But that didn't happen.
Yeah. I'll have to find an actual source for the thing I just said. I saw it on, well, the source I do currently have is I saw it on Democracy Now! This morning on the daily report that Amy Goodman does every day. She mentioned it, but yeah, I'll have to look into other sources. But yeah, she mentioned that he had gotten that, he had fought for gig workers and, you know, people without regular, quote unquote, regular jobs to get those, and freelancers to get some extra help.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that is accurate. I just, you know, I'm
for sure.
Just,
and I mean, everyone else is killing it too. A lot of Democrats are being, they're fighting for us in a way that I've been waiting for them to fight for us.
Right? Totally.
Yeah. God. Yeah. It is hard. I mean, the $1,200 is not nothing, but it is. And I'm really, 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 really trying not to be that asshole Canadian right now because it's not helpful. But $1,200 one time is not helpful in comparison to what other countries are getting right now. So hopefully there will be other bills in the very near future. And I know a bunch of Democrats have said things like, this is just temporary, like, hopefully more will be happening soon. But it is something.
Yeah. Well, when you hear the interview that we did a little bit earlier, it's based on what you made in 2018 or if you filed for 2019 and you made money then and now you're not making money and it'll be reconciled in 2021. But if you need money now, you're sort of fucked. So,
yeah. But OK, more good news.
Yeah, sorry. It easily devolves into bad news, doesn't it?
I know. It's a rough time, everyone. A couple more things I have for you, though, which are nice if you need a little serotonin in your brain. This is from Emily Scott, and we're getting so many messages about people's companies or universities or, you know, or them personally making protective gear. So Emily says, Syracuse University's computer science department is 3D printing face shields and other PPE as we speak. I love that. This is from M. Brandsburg. And they said the whole of the UK just stood outside and clapped for our carers who support the NHS. This isn't really a country that sings out windows for people, but I was actually teary-eyed seeing my whole street out at 8 p.m. cheering.
Yeah, I just saw a video, too. They're doing this in Atlanta. They're doing it all over the place. But there's, you know, when they have shift changes at the hospitals downtown, all the people from their balconies cheer and clap and make noise. And it gave me goosebumps just to see everybody, like, being so supportive and being so together. Like, we have never been more together now that we have to be alone. It's just crazy and awesome.
It is, yeah. It's a very interesting time psychologically. You know what I mean? feeling so, I was talking to a friend yesterday and I said, usually when I'm going through a mental health crisis, one of the things that stops me from reaching out to people or feeling connected is this feeling of shame. Like I'm the only one struggling from this, or that I'm embarrassed that I'm struggling so much, or that I feel alone because other people are, seemingly have it more together than I do based on their social media presence or whatever. And so it's hard to reach out to people about what you're going through in quote unquote more normal times. But something that's been interesting about what we're all going through right now is, although I'm struggling, I also feel not alone. We're all going through it together. And it's a weird sense of camaraderie while also feeling physically alone. So it's different than anything I've ever experienced in terms of everybody feeling going through these waves of emotion at the same time and being able to talk to people about it and not feeling alone. That's been really nice. And it's reminded me that, like, when I struggle with other stuff, I should also talk about that with friends, because the chances are, you know, I'm less alone than I think I am. Mm-hmm. So that's been really nice. Yeah. This is really nice. This is from Deborah in Arizona. She said, I work for Pima County in Tucson, and our county administrator has promised that no one working for the county will go without a paycheck, even though many public-facing departments have been closed because of the pandemic. The county administration is finding work for all of these staff members, and my office is going to get some library staff to help us out. I am so grateful to work in a place that really takes care of its people, and I hope you are all doing well, and thank you so much for bringing laughs to us during this anxiety-provoking time.
Nice.
So that was nice. Yeah. This is a funny one. This is from Scott Taylor. He said, with the Trump hotels shut down, Doral will be able to get rid of their bed bug problem.
Oh.
That's good. Jose Panada shared a tweet with us originally from Brian Rosenthal. And he said, yesterday, Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City asked people who have recovered from coronavirus to donate plasma to see if it could help current patients. And today they told staff that in the first hour, 500 people volunteered.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And two more quick things here. This is just an article that I found that I personally loved. Animal shelters in New York City are running out of dogs to adopt.
Oh, now I want people to be very careful, because I was thinking about this. People running out and adopting dogs. You're going to have to go back to work at some point.
Yes.
So don't adopt a dog. And I'm terrified of all the dogs that are going to have to be relinquished when everybody goes back to work. Because of my divorce, like, I've got a dog all by myself now, and I'm not relinquishing my dog, but it's twice as hard when you don't have a partner to help take care. So just consider that this isn't going to be how it is forever, at least hopefully not, when you're adopting a dog.
Very good point. Yes. Take the commitment to adopting your dog seriously, even though we are in a pandemic. Yeah. Dogs thrive on routine and love and care, and it's a lot of uprooting for them to go through that. So yeah, try to make a very conscious decision. Think about it long term. That being said, very heartwarming.
Still very wonderful. And I know most people are it's going to be great, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is not good news so much as a tweet that someone tweeted at us, and I thought it was worth amplifying. They said, hey, any chance you could squeeze in a quick reminder to your listeners not to lick envelopes? Your postal carriers and everyone will really thank you. Thank you so much for your amazing work. I hadn't even thought about that. Don't lick your envelopes.
Yeah, yeah. I think Jordan had brought it up in a show earlier. Or I'd heard it somewhere. Maybe it was from that tweet. That could have been from that tweet, but very good point. Just don't lick things. Stop licking.
Stop. I should tell my dog that.
No way will Moo ever stop licking you.
You know, it's really hard not to let people pet him when we're out walking around the neighborhood, because he's just so cute and people always want to pet him. And it's been very hard for me to be like, no, please don't touch him.
Well, I have a teenage dire wolf who barks and it looks like it will maul you, but is a total derpy love dog. So it's actually probably works in my favor, because nobody wants to pet her.
Aw.
Everyone's like, I'm leaving them alone.
How are you holding up over there, AG?
You know, seeing better, seeing worse. It's interesting. I'm just trying to get a routine. Like when I was, I get up every morning, I go down to the park, I run with the dog. And then I noticed when I came home today and put the dog in her crate and poured myself a big thing of water and got in the car to go to Santos Coffee House, which, by the way, anyone in San Diego, Santos Coffee House on Thorne and 32nd Street in North Park is open. They make delicious food and incredible coffee, and they'll bring it out to your car, and they have carry out. They're considered essential, and it's a woman-owned business. They're LGBTQ plus friendly and just absolutely wonderful business, and I love their coffee. Go there. But I go, and I go in to get my coffee, and this is the second day in a row I've done it, and I was like, oh, I have a routine, and I was just so excited by these tiny little things that I'm doing the same as I did yesterday to get into a routine. That's just how my brain functions better because of, mm-hmm. you know, because of the PTS, I have a lot of memory problems. I'm sort of scatterbrained a little bit. And unless I have these lockdown pinpoint sections of my day that I can, routinely go back to, it really grounds me. And so that, just that, those little tiny acts I've noticed have been helping me over this past week. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for these, just these little things that are still there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a similar thing to you, from my own trauma, where I also struggle to remember things, and the stress of what's happening has made me feel extra scattered. But something I've been implementing the last couple of days is I kind of adapt to, what's happening and figure out ways to, and it's hard when you work for a news podcast. Sometimes you want to be informed and you're thirsty for the information, but you also literally have to turn it off sometimes for your sanity. Setting little reminders to do things. So setting self-care on my phone, just literally like setting a Hey Siri reminder, being like, okay, at this time, I'm going to go for a walk. At this time, I'm going to take this thing off my to-do list. At this time, I'm going to do this. And it helped because it helps me to feel a little more organized when I'm feeling particularly anxious and forgetful. So that's been helpful to me.
Yeah, I think we sometimes take for granted how structured our daily lives can be, and when that goes away. And also, I thought I didn't like people. And as it turns out, I love people and I miss people. And so I have to readjust that whole, recovering misanthrope, because you'd be like, I don't want to go there. I don't, people, fuck people. I love people and I miss people. And so.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One more thing that I think is a piece of good news for me personally. Obviously grocery stores are making a killing right now, but depending on what city you're in and depending on what your state or local government has deemed essential, your farmers markets might be shutting down and your local farms might be really struggling. I know in San Diego they are. A whole bunch of farmers markets have shut down. And so local farms are asking people to please order a CSA box. A lot of farms have delivery or curbside pickup farm stands. So I just ordered a box full of fresh local produce here in San Diego. And you should look into it in the city that you're in, because a lot of farmers markets are not deemed essential. And so those independent farmers are struggling.
Yeah, these small farms don't get these big farm bailouts either. So definitely.
Yep.
That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah. Support your local farms. And, you're at home all the goddamn time. You may as well cook some delicious stuff.
I burn Jell-O, so I need to learn how to cook first. All right. Well, thank you, Amanda, for the good news block. And everyone, please join us Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific time if you're a patron for our cocktail quarantine Q&A. Happy hour situation at Extravaganza Bonanza. It's got a very long name. And we'll be there to answer our patrons' questions. And until then, until the Sunday shows, then everyone, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, and take care of your mental health. I've been AG.
I've been Amanda Reeder.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is executive produced and directed by AG and Jordan Coburn, and engineered and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell and Starburns Industries. Our marketing manager, executive assistant, production and social media direction is Amanda Reeder. Fact-checking and research by AG, Jordan Coburn, and Amanda Reeder. Our music is written and performed by They Might Be Giants. Our web design and branding are by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. And our website is dailybeanspod.com.